Cell 6, Dramatalk med Rut Dennison, Ljusbacken, 1981.
I think of this in this moment of a Theravadin monk who was in the place in the desert where I build up, or where I have a small meditation retreat house, and where we have a small courses of Vipassana meditation, and especially it is designed for self courses, for those who do like to have a quiet place for doing a course all by himself or by herself. Everything around you is quiet and all designed for your practice. And I had a visitor, as I already mentioned, the Theravadin monk, and he wanted to be quiet and to prepare his discourses for a retreat he was giving on the east coast of America. And one day I asked him kindly to maybe give us a discourse. And so he did, and he talked about his own meditation and the value of meditation. Now, I don't want to tell you more what he said. he talked a lot about that. But why I mention this is because I liked the beginning he did. And he did recited a Pali chant, meaning that he pays respect to the Buddha, and he respects all, expressing a respectful attitude. And I liked that very much, and he invited us all together to speak it. And because I think of him this moment, I like to do the same. I like to invite you to recite this respect to the Buddha and to the enlightened mind, your acknowledging that you are doing this. So it was it is in Pali, and so we have to perhaps listen a little careful to recite that. There are a few words. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato to sama sambuddhassa. Perhaps some have heard it already. Now, we all do it. You hum first, and then search time, you probably can do it. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Once again, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Nice? You like it? Now do it once again. I think we can do it now all together. Take a breath. Acknowledge your being here and your inner attitude toward the Dharma. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. You can do that every night. You can do it also every time you sit down before you start your meditation. It invokes, it's an invocation to also. Same time, it is, if you are with your heart in it, it really can pull the attention quick into this present moment, into your being, and it can change also your attitude. You know, it is a respectfulness toward the enlightened mind, the Buddha, of which you have the seed in yourself already. So, today, on the sixth day, is it the sixth? Yeah, the sixth day. Perhaps, especially the new students, can say that we have begun a journey to discover ourselves, or a journey into our minds, deep into our minds, to find out who we are. You all have noticed, not only the new meditators, also the old ones, that it is quite difficult. It is always feeling like we do a new beginning. And there is, by us all, experienced so far, a lot of boredom, a lot of heaviness in us, the difficulty of laziness and tiredness. Some of us have experienced doubt to the extent where the question came, why am I here? I have done so much already. Others may have asked the question, well, doesn't seem to be my dish of tea. Feeling my sensations, watching my breath. How can that lead me to enlightened mind? How can that bring the answers to all my questions? You see, that is very difficult in the beginning, this journey into our minds, this journey of self-discovery. Perhaps the word of Spinoza, a very distinguished European philosopher, said, all noble things are as difficult as they are rare. So that perhaps may encourage us and give us a new courage to break through and to continue through the difficulties, which are in the beginning tremendously. Also, it may make us realize that our spiritual path we are walking, this journey of self-discovery, is really not a very ordinary thing. It is rather a precious undertaking. First of all, because not everyone discovers such route in his life or her life. And secondly, it leads to the highest manifestation or evolution of a human being. And what could be more precious to do than to do this high task, or to find oneself on a path which in which we can accomplish ourselves in this high task. So because of this, I think it is good to remember when it becomes difficult and when it feels discouraging, to be very gentle, very caring, and very friendly. I have several times, on several occasions, called your attention to this already. I mean, we compared that what we do to be on a journey or on a path. It reminds us on walking away. When one walks away into some domain, into some land which isn't known so well to us, which in this case for us for the journey of self-discovery, that what we step into and into what we walk is not really very known territory. It's unknown. And so as we are walking, when we want to walk into a land which isn't known to us, we need a map. Every car driver has a map in his car. The explorer will have maps around himself or with him. And in the same way, for this journey of self-discovery, we need a map. And many maps, actually very well-designed maps, are given to us by several explorers of this journey. Of all these maps, however, the most clearest map is that of the Buddha. It's the, to my knowledge, the most oldest one. Perhaps there are the ones of the Vedas earlier and older. But the Buddha's way, the Buddha's map for the road of self-discovery is 2,500 years old, pretty old. That is to say that it is valuable and applicable, and guiding us, this map he gave, in a 20th century or 2,500 years later, is actually saying that at that time, the path of self-discovery, a human being had to walk or walked, is not different than now. We don't discover different things despite the change of time, of technology, conditions the human being lives in. Because it refers to the deeper self, not to the outside. Self-discovery is a journey into your own inside, into your existence, into the process of mind and body. And it hasn't apparently changed. It's human beings have the same problems, have the same psychological feelings and conditions and as they had 2,500 years ago. So it shows us something of the universality of the path, of the map, or of the whole human self-discovery. For me it is like a miracle, something very astonishing and very beautiful. See that beautiful in that I might like to say that it actually shows that the Buddha must have had a tremendous insight into the human psyche, into the human nature, into the human mind. So very deep and totally penetrating, that what he said and the guideline he gave us after he reached enlightenment is so still so valuable, still to be used, can still be used. It has not changed. That says really he has comprehended and seen the entire condition of a human being. Everything what is to be known about a human being. And it's this process, it lives, mind, body, psyche. It has really clearly understood by him. Therefore, his map, which he designed for us to come to the same clear understanding and clear seeing and wisdom, is still the same. We can use it. And it's safe. And it leads us to the same goal, to the experience or to the completion of our being. So, and this well-designed map for us, it comes to us known as the Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path, noble because it deals with realities, and realities are those things which we can experience. They are not outside of our experiencing structure. And eightfold it is called because there it has eight links, eight rules, eight indications what to do. Eight links would be good to say. Now let us look at these links. We also can say there are steps, 8 steps. They shouldn't be so understood that one step after the other is to be learned and to perfect it, because actually one path is as one step is as we are walking upon the Eightfold Path is connecting to the next, is supporting another. There is the first step which comes to us as the right understanding or the right view. Now this is the first step, but it is also the last, because right understanding must be right from the beginning there. It is because of some kind of understanding you may have had in your mind, either intuitional, or you knew from another course, or you have had a feeling about it which was somehow a little open to your seat of enlightenment, to your intuitive mind. You must have had that sort of understanding in the beginning to come here. It was not just the word you heard that here is a Vipassana meditation course. You had some a connectedness which comes through understanding or through viewing the situation. So you see, from the beginning, before we step upon this the path, we have to have some understanding. The right understanding means it isn't opposed to the bad understanding. It isn't just making it good. This is a very special right. It transcends the wrong and the right, or it can see both, and it is understanding that it means it is that type of understanding which sees somehow always a little bit through, right down the line in yourself, to your wisdom, to your basic intuition. You understand it is good to go to the Vipassana meditation course rightly, because you know there is something done which is leading me to self-knowledge, or leading me to, at least in the beginning, to some reduction of my confusion and my wrong understanding, my suffering. In other words, there is a little, and right understanding is a little opening to the wisdom energy in you. Wisdom is that knowledge which is the knowledge of your of your what you really basically are, as total self-understanding. So in the beginning, this knowledge, this understanding will be very feeble and will be just little penetrated with little wisdom, and will not be always totally right. But and that is the beginning. But at its completion, right understanding is penetrating to the deepest levels of your mind. And it is that the place then where the mind understands everything and is awakened to itself. Now in the beginning, as we are here, the right understanding deals with certain to understand certain natural laws which govern our daily life, which govern our everyday unfolding. Now the most important law of this nature to understand is the law of karma, is the law of cause and effect. We should remember here that nothing does happen by chance or by coincidence, that everything what arises or what happens is the effect of the preceding cause. That is to say, every action I do, I commit, has had a cause, or has a cause, and the action which is done now was the result of something before. So, with respect to our daily doings, when I do act motivated by anger, when I act out of gloominess or heaviness, when I commit an act by greed or hate, no good, pleasant effect can come. No result comes from that on which you will have joy. An action will come about which is bringing about pain or sorrow, either for yourself or for somebody else. Whenever, however, I am acting out of the motive of a light mind or a happier mind, an open mind, without greed, without hate, let us say a mind of a generous mind, very happy results will come. Impossible you can act, the result will be painful or hurting yourself or any other. And I think this is very important to understand, because the more I understand that my action is a result of a preceding cause, and the more I do integrate that in my life, in my unfoldings, the more I can cultivate and develop good states of mind, good actions, can bring about an unfolding in myself which is more harmonious, which is more pleasant, less suffering, we can say the same way. That also says, if you have followed me, that when I understand and integrate deeply this law, this natural law, I begin to take responsibility for myself. I begin to wake up, aha, what I do now is very important to understand, that it has the right motives, that it is with an open mind, because it will have a result pretty shortly. And as a responsible human being, you will be very careful not to act, to create actions or deeds which are creating disharmony or pain or suffering. We already suffer enough. So this and the understanding understanding of law and cause and effect, the law of karma, can help us tremendously. Being harmonious, in being positive, in being supportive for the practice of, say, Vipassana meditation. The Buddha, to right understanding, also belongs a field which we may call dana or generosity. Dana is a Buddha language term, is Pali, which is Buddha's language. The Buddha stressed very often the power of generosity, good feeling which ensues or which comes from the joy of giving or from just giving. Why? Giving is, first of all, we should understand that giving is not really is not only a joyful and a happy event for the receiver. It is actually more for the giver, which we seldom do consider. I think we all have experienced ourselves in the joy of giving, in sharing, in making somebody else happy. But it isn't because of that that it happens. I am joyful when I give. There's another aspect involved. We seldom or we hardly know of it, which is actually a natural law. It is that giving, or the act of being generous, is a demonstration of non-greed. Understand? Yes, it is a representation of a mind which doesn't hold on, which says, I give, I share my energies with you, I give something of my wisdom, I maybe give you a present on the material level, just being generous on whatever level you may find yourself. You may be able to. It is a direct manifestation of non-attaching, of non-attachment. You let go, you give. You see, that is a mirror, actually, or it mirrors the principle of our practice in meditation, of mirrors the principle of walking the path of the Buddha. Why? Because we constantly have to give up. We have to give up our old tendencies, our mind which wants to cling. We have to give up a lot of desires, of our indulgences. We have to give up doubt. We have to give up laziness. We have to give up strong attachments. We have to give up independence. We have to give up fear. All these things to which we cling, we have to give up. So the path of self-discovery is a way of giving up lots of things. And when I express myself in sharing, in generosity, then I do represent the same principle. I give up whatever I give. And so to understand the act of giving, it's a very human activity and a very practice, I mean an old action, isn't right. It is some old happening, always has happened in the relationship between people, this giving. And it is a very positive force for another reason. Giving does also bring joy about and produces good relationship. Have you ever had a boyfriend or a girlfriend really deeply, have you ever had one whom you could say you like because she is greedy or she is stingy and not likes to give and share, is very egotistic? So the aspect of sharing and giving and being generous, very important between two people, between all people. In a community where there is no giving, it's impossible to make that community go. Just at Luisbergen, the short while I'm here, lots of complaints come to me for this domain. The complaints are, there's not enough giving here. And yet there is a lot. But still, there is a felt a lack. So that's why the Buddha stresses very much to practice, to understand rightly this domain of generosity. Another part of right understanding is acknowledging our special relationship we have with our parents. How festive. We have with our parents. It's a very unique karma we have here. Karma in terms what of law and effect, you see. I am the effect of my parents' interrelationship. And that is a relationship or a karma you cannot just throw away or forget, because you are the direct cause of it. And you maybe are the effect, a direct effect you are from it. You maybe already are the cause for the next effect. So here we should understand, therefore, our responsibility we have in this link, in this special relationship, and also our obligation to them. Disregarding, no matter how much you think they have done wrong in their education with you and in their bringing up with you, our responsibility and having obligation to them means that we now, since we are stepped upon the path, that we begin to clarify that a little bit more, understand that it is very natural to free ourselves from the care and the protection of the parents psychologically. Doesn't need to be on the material level or on the physical level. We spend so much time in getting so much energy in getting free from them, But there is not the right understanding in there, and though it becomes very choppy and very rocky and very painful and sometimes hateful too, and also sometimes we become enemies of each other. And then it works in us because we really cannot forget, and it turns, somehow we make a new karma. So in the space we gain here in separating, trying to gain independence from that, in that new one space of freedom, we should put in, discover our responsibility. And what means that? Well, we may help them if we feel they are not wise enough. They create suffering for themselves, they are too closed in, they are full of anxiety, they also are full of ignorance. They did, however, in their upbringing with us what they could. Now with your wisdom and your understanding, you go in with a different attitude into the situation. And understand it rightly. Understand their weaknesses, their parents' weakness. Understand, however, your unique relationship in it. We can really not just cut off, because we are that in direct result. So then, leading them and guiding them indirectly, very carefully, to the Dharma, without that you bring them to a meditation course. However, in America we already have courses we call parents' course, and many parents come always once in a year. They can talk, that's talking, they can talk, and they have a big supper in the evening and a late supper. And they have discussion groups. We make it very easy for them, so that they not run away right away. We give nice things. They feel good. They can chit chat a lot. They only have once in a day an hour silence. But we keep them busy. They don't notice that they have more silence. So, right understanding also involves... I'm sorry, there was a raised hand before, a question, and I couldn't refer to that right away. Who was that? Sugata, yeah?
As I already mentioned, there are millions of human beings which have no parents.
Yeah.
Or lost the parents, or have such an enmity against the parents that they divorced from them, and they are many times in a great trouble.
Yes.
And the thing is, they cannot be free this karma, because it's completely negative.
Yes, it can, right. But you see, we are talking here, the Buddha is asking not to do any about it, except to begin to understand. Even if you had no parents, somewhere you had, at one point you had parents, at least at the moment of conception, they were united. Then they got lost somewhere, died or separated, and gave the child away, or whatever. So when you now begin to step upon the Buddha's path and begin to develop a right understanding, and also the law of karma, of look, cause and effect, it is then a quiet looking, a quiet understanding my situation, not trying to cut loose or to emancipate me from that relationship. Just the fact that I begin to understand and change my attitude from hate and enmity and aversion and anger, whatever I had, I feel in me toward my parents, even unknown, unknown, or the parents who has raised me, or the aunt which has raised me. Someone has somehow taken care of you in the time we could not take care of. And all what is asked from us is just to allow the mind to come to a space where you just look at it and withhold in that neutral looking and observing the feelings you have about it. It changes whatever I had as a reaction. Also to recognize whatever I feel here, that tremendous hostility, it is a mind situation. I am not a little child anymore in the hands of my hostile mother or my dominating father. I am now here alone, making it on myself. And I cannot play anymore this relationship as I experienced then, and insist in the mind to be in that. To think for yourself and to get information from other sources, to get your own experience in that. The number 13 is a quality of the mind which has something to do with being greedy and being greedy for nice things all the time, just selecting that what is pretty and lovely, what you call lovely, might not be in reality. Somebody else may call it not so loving, so good and pretty. But we should become aware as explorer and as practitioners of widening your heart and your mind. We should become aware of this quality in ourselves, which is greedy only for the nice things and pushes the others away. And why it is stressed is because this greed reaching out for just the good is a separation of things which aren't so good, and a closing off to part of life, which also is life. It isolates, and it deprives me from experiencing the whole spectrum of life, all what is there.